Coming to you from two different countries at once. Love when that happens. It's Ventriloquism Weekly. Hello, hello, hello. Matt Bailey here. Very, very excited about today because it's awesome. Because all the way from the UK, Steve Hewlett Skypes in for a wonderful conversation. Hewlett, you may remember, made it all the way to the finals of Britain's Got Talent with his character Arthur Lager. His wit and command of the audience made him a fan favorite. Steve's love for this art led him to go professional at the age of just 22, and he never looked back. Here now to talk about his experience as a working British vent, including becoming dear friends with the legendary and unfortunately recently departed Keith Harris, our interview with Steve Hewlett. Steve Hewlett, welcome to Ventriloquism Weekly. How are you today, sir?
Thank you very much. I'm very, very happy. Very, very good to be here. Thank you for asking. Well, I'm here and you're there. I'm not there.
Yes. Thank you for doing this. Thank you for escaping. It's 10 o'clock over here, 3 o'clock over your way. What part of England are you in?
I'm in the south coast of England, in between Hastings and Brighton. Television was invented in Hastings. And I don't know what was invented in Brighton. Donuts, maybe. I've had donuts there. But I'm in Eastbourne. Eastbourne's a wonderful town in Sussex, south coast.
Very, very cool. Very cool. This is going to be a lot of fun today. How did you get started in ventriloquism?
I was watching a TV show in 1987. I'm giving away my age. I was 12 then, eight years ago. So that's obviously a lie. I turned 40 very recently. So
congratulations.
Thank you. So 28 years ago when I was 12, I was watching New Faces. It was a TV talent show, like America's Got Talent, but nearly 30 years ago. And there was a ventriloquist on the show who lived down the road from me and my family. And I decided to watch the show with my family. And I was in awe of this ventriloquist that was on the show. And the next day, he actually won the final that night. So it was a TV show where he became overnight success. He's called Jimmy Tamley. Yes. He's the Vent Haven. Have you seen Jimmy before?
I've not seen him in person, but when I got started, he uses a lot of the Axtell figures. And when I got started, Steve Axtell had him heavily featured on his site, on the Ostrich page and a whole bunch of stuff. So I'm familiar with his work.
Yeah, definitely. Jimmy's now one of my best mates over here. So we're very close. And so Jimmy started giving me lessons. I knocked on his door and said, would you teach me? I love what you've done last night. And he sent me away and said, there's a new book that just come out. He told me to go away in the nicest possible way and learn from this book. 2 weeks later, I was back knocking on his door saying, I've learned ventriloquism. Can I show you what I've learned? And then he kind of... you know, he tutored me for that moment on, and I became a roadie. So I used to jump in his car after school, and he'd drive me to a venue two or three times a week, and I was a roadie. I'd done his music. I sat and watched him deal with audiences, different venues, and we went to army bases, hotels. And so I was an apprentice, really, for 10 years. And at age 22, 10 years later, I turned professional, and that was 18 years ago. So I've done this since I was 12. Basically, I didn't look back the moment I started. I got hooked on ventriloquism. And it's very rare over here. There's not many. Like there is in America. I know there's so many in America and really great ones too. I admire many of the American ventriloquists. But in the UK, there's just a handful of us left.
Why do you think it's so concentrated over here? I've had the same conversation with Darren Carr about this in Australia. Why is it so sparse in other countries?
I'm not sure. Television killed a lot of variety, like it did, I think, in many countries. But ventriloquism died out with, you know, jugglers and magic, you know, magicians. But magicians of TV has championed magic over the last 5 to 10 years over here. We've had so many different magicians be successful. But it still hasn't happened to the ventriloquist. Now, Nina Conti and Paul Zerdin from the UK have recently done great. Nina Conti is one of our leading ventriloquists over here now. You know, like I can name a few that are just solely ventriloquists that are doing great. And I'm very proud to be one of them. Steve Hewlett, thestevehewlettshow.com.
Self-plug, please. I love it. I hate when guests come on here and they have nothing to plug, and it's like, well, I want to promote you. So, yes, the stevehewlettshow.com will give them all that information.
Yeah, you can get DVDs from there. Nina Conti is great. Paul Zerdin, Jimmy Tambly. Sadly, I went to our leading legendary ventriloquist passed away last week, Keith Harris, Awful the Duck. And you can't see this if you're not watching the screen. Can you see that? That was
this
was at his service yesterday. So
that's a book. Is that a book from the service? Or I can't quite. There's a little bit of a shine.
Yeah. All right. It's a little booklet from the service. Oh. So Keith Harrison Orville. Google him. He had a 50-year career over here, and he was the most famous we had. So that was very sad to say goodbye. I carried him out and carried him back in and helped with the burial. It was a sad occasion, but I've had a huge connection with many of the ventriloquists of the past, and I know all of the ventriloquists over here. I've had good contact with them because I admire the art, you know, that we do have. And so the ones that are left, we stay in touch. We never get to work together, but I'm not sure why it's not as popular as it used to be. There used to be around about 400 ventriloquists in the UK in the 50s and started to dwindle around the 60s, definitely in the 70s. Yeah. And then in the 80s, we had Keith Harris, who we just lost. And he was famous for 50 years, you know. So and it ended up in there yesterday. It was very sad.
Yes, it really was. And the timing is such that it happened that... can you talk a little bit about the influence he had, Keith Harris had, on you as a performer?
Yes, he because it was in the 80s, I started learning in 87, and he was heavily featured on TV over here. So he had a lot of coverage. And when I was 15, 25 years ago, I got my first TV show with Keith Harris. Mm-hmm. And so I was on the show. I'm going to try and upload it to YouTube very soon. But so he was giving me lessons on TV, and when I was 20, I met up with him when I worked in his town 5 years later, and he gave me one of his characters that he never used anymore. So I put him in the act, and that's Pongo the Skunk, who's now been my show for 20 years.
Wow.
And he knew he was, he had cancer. He knew he was going. It was very close. And about 6 weeks ago, I went to his house, you know, to say goodbye, and which was very tough, but he handed two more characters down to me. So not only was he influential in, you know, sort of as a ventriloquist, he was a very dear friend, and he was always there for me. He always phoned me up. He'd always phone up, give me advice. And just before Britain's Got Talent, which I'd done 2 years ago now, he was one of the people I'd speak to and say, should I really do this? And he said, yeah, you've got nothing to lose. Go for it. And he was behind me 100%. Even afterwards, he was very proud. So, you know, I was like one of his... he sent me a birthday card for my 40th last week. So he passed away the day before. And this is very sentimental. It's supposed to be a jolly interview.
No. It's all this, in the timing. I really wanted to hear.
Yeah, this is my connection with the older generation of vets, and they have all inspired me. But his card actually were very... they meant a lot. You know, he said I was like a son to him. So well, we became very close as friends, as well as him being a hero of mine, you know?
That's incredible, and I love when that happens. And that happens a lot in this art form. I've seen it, and it's happened to me too. And it's, I think we're just so close as an art form, even all throughout the world, you know.
We should help each other, and I've helped many younger ventriloquists since Britain's Got Talent. I pass it on gladly, you know, because it is a dying art here. And if kids want to learn, I've helped probably 20 to 30 kids since TV last year, and there's a few golden nuggets, you know, that I know are going to carry on, but some of them are just that, you know, they try it out and they pick up something else, like a tennis racket. But it's ventriloquism, it needs dedication, you know.
Yeah, it really, really does. And there's a kid we had on the show a couple of weeks ago, Lachlan Werner.
Okay.
from the UK, and he's one of the, I think he's going to be one of those golden nuggets you were talking about. Just really ready to carry it on. And so I do want to switch gears. No easy way into this. But what led to your decision to do Britain's Got Talent? Because you did ventriloquism so proud on that show. So What led to that decision?
Well, because I've been in around 25 years, you kind of get on a pedestal of it's a roller coaster of you do cruise ships and you do holiday centers and cabaret, but there's nowhere else to go unless you dip your foot in the television market, you know. So Britain's Got Talent at the time was the only show that would showcase what I do. And I said no for 6 years. It was running for seven. This was year seven. And they phoned me up for an audition. They said it was a TV show, but they didn't say it was Britain's Got Talent. So I phoned them back. I already said no to Britain's Got Talent at that time, like weeks before. And they said, well, we've got an audition coming up for Britain's Got Talent. And I nearly hung up, but they said it was at the London Palladium, which is a venue I worked at when I was 20 as an usher. So I used to love the theatre. So I was trying to find different venues to work as a ventriloquist when I was 20. So London was a great place to be. And I'd watch shows every night, show people to their seats, sell ice cream. And in the intervals, I would be the one entertaining people and they'd be laughing before the show came back up again. So I just, want to try and make people laugh. So it was at the Palladium, my audition. So I said, well, I'm not doing anything next week. I'll come and audition for you. I got in front of the four judges. I had a 5 or 6 minute really good spot, standing ovation, and I got through. And it was quite unexpected to come out of the blue, the audition. But I asked, like I said, with Keith Harris, Jimmy Tammy, I asked a lot of my close friends at the time, should I go for this now? Am I ready for this risk, because it's a huge risk for a professional act to do. Yeah, like it is in America, if America's Got Talent, there's people that have been on there. Michael Harrison, I know, went on, and he was a very well-esteemed, a great ventriloquist over there. Mm-hmm. But I know he'd done Disney Magic. I used to work on Disney, and I know Michael was there the week before and after me, and he went down really well. And he took a risk, but it paid off, because he was great on the show. So, It was a decision I made, really. We had a little baby girl, and when you have children, I think your attitude changes towards whether you get a chance. I think you just take it because you want to have a brighter future for your kids. So this is, and I had something to showcase, and I hadn't had any notable television appearances up until that point, and I was 37 years old, so I thought, I've got nothing to lose. And so... my wife was behind me, and I said, yeah, I'm going to go for it. So once we'd done the audition, that went well. I got onto the TV show. My main character is called Arthur Largo. So mm-hmm. I went in with Arthur, but it was 2 weeks before the actual live shows came out. I had a Verna Finlay puppet because I bought quite a few puppets from Verna Finlay. Do you recall Verna?
Yes, Marianne Taylor took over for her. I think I got into Vent right as she was retiring. I don't know when she retired. Yeah. I could be years off, but of course everybody knows Verna, and Marianne took over.
I had about 5 or 6 from Verna. She was fantastic at making characters. She made me a Michael Jackson puppet once, So mm-hmm. she'd whatever you'd want, she'd make, and... I had quite a few from her. So I had this character, which was just a male puppet, and he had muscles, and he was quite a cool puppet. But I hadn't used him for about eight or nine years. And just before the live shows, I needed an extra minute in the show. And I looked at this puppet, which was just lying there in my room, and I said, I think that puppet could look like Simon Cowell. So she said, well, why don't we get it made up? I found this guy in Portugal who renovates puppets, strangely enough, and all this happened at the same time. I sent the puppet out to Portugal, and it came back 2 weeks later. It was about a week before we went live, and I opened the box, and Simon Cowell was lying there staring at me with a big smile on his face. Not the real one.
yeah, that'd be creepy.
it was creepy either way. But when we picked up that Simon Cowell, I said, I'm going to keep this secret until the day of the live show. So I didn't tell the producers I was going to do this. I just had my act with Arthur Lager. They were happy with that act, but in the rehearsals for the show, I ad-libbed a bit, and they loved the comedy. They said, if you can stick a bit more of that in tomorrow, then that's great. I said, I have got something up my sleeve, and they said, brilliant, just stick it in. So in the rehearsal a few hours before we went live on air, I brought out the Simon Cowell puppet for the producers, and it brought the house down. So a few hours later, whatever's on YouTube now, you see evidently how it happened. And Simon Cowell's reaction was actually, you know, that is how he reacted. He didn't know about it. So, yeah, you need something up your sleeve if you're going to do a show like that. So a week later, I brought Sunita out on the other arm, and that's history. Yeah, now, you know, that's the... Yeah, I never looked back. It was fantastic. It was really nice to do something different because I wrote the act in a week, you know.
What do you say to the people who have problems with how shows like that are run? Because it seems like your experience was nothing but positive, but then the other side is it's more of a reality show than a talent show.
Yes, well, they don't... I think like American Idol or X Factor, they follow them around, and yet they're on for like 3 months or something. But this show in the UK is over in 2 weeks. They do the auditions, but then the live shows is over in 2 weeks. So for me, I don't really see it as a reality show. It's kind of a variety show, and then mm-hmm. there's a winner. I came fourth in the show. That, you know, they didn't film us at home or anything. There was just a couple of little interviews and stuff, but I didn't see it as a reality show. It was a talent show like my friend done 28 years previous, and I was just following in his footsteps, really wanting to make him proud, which he was. So people, you know, it is, I suppose, like the X Factor and America's Got Talent. You do get to know the people a lot more because they feature them for weeks or maybe months, don't they? It drags on a bit.
Yeah, it drags on. I'm reading about Britain's Got Talent. Sometimes I'm like, wait a minute, there's 2 weeks, and then it's really, really short.
I mean, it's like a flash. I can't believe I've done the show. It's fantastic when I look back at it and say, wow, that was me. But because it was over so quick, it was quite a small part of my life, but it made the biggest impact in my career.
It did. We'll talk about that in a second. But you bring up a good point. I'll amend that question to say, why do you think there's a fundamental difference how they do it? Because it's the same production company. It's Simon Cowell's company. Yes. And how they do it over here versus how they do it over where you are. Because I do think that model lends itself more to, like you were saying, being a show like Jimmy did years ago. So
yes.
Why do you think there's a discrepancy there?
Yeah, my I think the way reality television has taken over, especially in the UK, I mean, you've got the Kardashians over there, and that, you know, people love to watch people. They love to get to know people, and they vote for them. If they find out that they're actually nice people, or sometimes they vote because they're nasty people, and they just like to watch car crash television, if you know what I mean. They like to see things go wrong. They like people arguing, and they like it when the judges are really nasty. People do make fun of it, and they do dislike what the judges are saying, but it doesn't stop them watching it. It actually drags more people in as viewers. And I think, for me, I was very lucky. I was one of the lucky ones. I've had a lot of friends come on the show, and they haven't done as well. And, you know, yeah, and you're rooting for your friends to do well on these
Absolutely.
Shows. And because I've been in this business so long, I've got so many friends I've worked with all over the world, and I see them on the show, and when they don't go down well, you're gutted for them, because, you know, we're all in the same industry, and I really love to see my friends doing well. When they have been featured quite highly and they do great, that's brilliant. I've had a few friends on recently, and we're all in touch now, and, you know, we're doing the same work. It's really nice to see. Yeah, catch up with people.
That's fantastic. And how has the show impacted your career? How what happened to the bookings immediately after? What's happened?
I've been lucky to always been constantly working. I don't know if that's because there's not many ventriloquists around, or because I was one of their favorites, but I've been working since I was 22. After the show, I had different genres of work coming in. I've already done cruise ships and theatres, but what I really wanted to do was a theatre tour. And so the show actually gave me a chance to do a theatre tour all over the UK. So from Cornwall, which is down south, all the way up to Scotland, I organised with a company back home to tour the UK. So I'd done 45 theatres last year.
Wow.
With my you know, my face on the poster, and that show actually helped me get that. And then I filmed my DVD on the tour. So it gave me a chance to actually get higher profile, and that's why I finally went for the show. I needed to step up the ladder. And as a ventriloquist, they don't really give you a chance these days to do TV. So you need Britain's Got Talent as a stepping stone. So, yeah, I got to do a theatre. I do a lot of corporate work now. And I think the idea is, you know, television helps you work less and earn more. That's the secret. It's not a secret. Everyone wants that. But I have actually earned more, but I've also worked more. because I've done a lot of charity work since then as well. And, you know, you get a lot of benefit concerts and stuff, people wanting you. But I'm very happy. I'm at the O2 tomorrow, actually, which is a huge venue in London. And I'm doing one of the smaller rooms after the event, but it's called Hoop Aid. So it's a huge basketball thing. Lots of American basketball players coming over. And we've got loads of Britain's Got Talent acts like Diversity, who won a couple of years ago. And they're doing a dance routine, Flawless. Yeah, so I'll see a lot of me old Britain's Got Talent friends tomorrow afternoon. But I'm 2 years on, I'm still appearing in charity events. And you know, I'm planning another tour next year. I've got loads more characters I'm getting made up. And, I mean, I've got loads of different characters from different people as well. Like Marianne Taylor, I've used about six of her characters. But it was a Marianne Taylor character that made me famous, Arthur Lager. He was my main one. That was Marianne's.
Yes, and let's talk about him. How did he come about? Who's he based on?
He's... Every bald man in the world. No, he's I get a good laugh from the audience when he comes out just because his name's called Arthur Lager, and I think you call it beer in America. So I don't know if Arthur Lager does get as much of a laugh in the US, but he's got a great name.
Fantastic name.
His faces are really nice, you know. I've had to have him upgraded recently, so it's a new maker. But she makes some great characters, and so it's coming up with something that's got to be fresh and original, and people can relate to old men. So he is based just on a miserable old man that there's been a lot of ventriloquists in the UK with a granddad puppet or an old man puppet. And you've got the obvious Walter, Jeff Dunham and Walter. And I know, yeah, there's a lot of people with old men characters. And I never had one for quite a while, but I had a manager who said, oh, you should get an old man puppet and pretend he's just come off a reality TV show. So I got the old man puppet made from Marianne Taylor, and I started using him, and he went down a storm. I'd done a show in Turkey in a hotel. I took my Verna Finley guy out, who ended up being Simon Cowell, and I put the old man in one night doing the same material, just gave him a deeper voice, and Arthur Lager was born. That was about 11 years ago now. So, finding new characters is kind of tricky, but I've got so many now that I'm working on. It's quite exciting writing a new show and writing a new tour.
That's fantastic. Now, we jumped a little bit. There was a little bit of a lag in Skype. You said that you had to have him remade because of something that happened. I think we came right back in when you had said that he has a new maker. So why'd you have him remade?
It was Arthur Lager.
Yes.
Yes, sorry. Arthur. He had to be remodeled, really, because not only was he a bit dirty, because I'd used him for 10 years. I just wanted a brand new model. So Arthur's been made over in the UK by Peter Pullen, and Peter Pullen is a premier legendary puppet builder. He made Keith Harris's Orville and Cuddles. There's a guy called Roger De Courcy with a famous bear called Nookie. He made Ken Dodd's Dickie Mint. If you're listening from the UK, you'll know these names. Emu, Rod Hull's Emu. He made loads and loads of famous dummies over here for Paul Levent, Ken Wood. So many, Dennis Spicer. Yeah. So Neville King and Grandad. If you get a chance to Google a ventriloquist from the UK, put Neville King and Grandad in. He's just hilarious. We lost him a couple of years ago also, but he was just one of the greats, you know, of the British dictionary of ventriloquists. So yeah, I admire all of these guys, and I'm paying tribute to them. I'm writing something right now where I want to pay tribute to the great ventriloquists of the past. So, and I know where all of their characters are, so we're paying tribute in a nice way. So I have to let you know about that. That'll be fun.
Yes, please. Keep us informed. I'll put it out there to the listeners. That would be awesome. What new character are you most excited about for this new tour and for your shows just coming up?
Yeah, I started to get, after the Simon and Sunita, I started to get some celebrity dummies made. I'm waiting for some, you know, some really interesting celebrities to come out of the woodwork, because you need to come up with something that's really topical, you know. And so you wait for Justin Bieber to make that next mistake, and then you've got another 10 minutes, 20 minutes in your show. So I do actually do this gag, and it's on the DVD, so I can give it to you because it's already gone. I introduce a brand new celebrity dummy. Please welcome little Justin Bieber. So his music starts playing, and then I walk off the stage, come back about 30 seconds later after looking for him, and say, sorry, kids, he's not turned up. And so because over in the UK, he's left a lot of audiences waiting. And so after they realize that I haven't got a Justin Bieber dummy, it's quite funny.
That's hysterical. I didn't know he abandoned people in the UK. That's horrible.
He left us waiting, yeah. So and now they're not waiting anymore. I don't think they want him back.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. You know, when he screws up, that's a new bit every day.
Oh, we'll definitely get a lot of material out of it. So maybe one day I'll introduce him with that gag, but actually bring him out. So we're just waiting for some funny stuff to happen, you know. Yeah. As soon as the Madonna thing, I'm sure every ventriloquist has done this, as soon as the Madonna tripped on stage. Did you see that clip?
No.
She tripped at the Brits, Madonna fell over.
No, I haven't seen that.
She fell off the stage. Somebody tried to pull her cloak off. And so for about 4 or 5 weeks, I put a cloak on my dummy. And I said, where'd you get that from? I got it from Madonna off eBay. And then I pull it off his neck, and then he falls off the table. And it worked for about 3 or 4 weeks. But you got to be topical. Keep it fresh.
Keep it fresh. This is wonderful. What do you want to see? We'll end here with my final question. What do you want to see from ventriloquists who are coming up in the ranks today?
My favorite American ventriloquist, they've done most of it, really. I mean, we had Ron Lucas over here, and I love Ron because he's my all-time favorite. And he done almost everything you could possibly do with the mask, and he made everything talk. And I've seen him in Vegas. And then we've got Jeff Dunham, who I've seen over here 3 times on world tours. He's gone the controversial way with Ahmed, and I adore his peanut. His peanut and water are just great. Jay Johnson, also with his live show, The Two and Only. I saw that his very last show in London. Very sadly, closed too early, way too early, because he's a genius.
Yeah,
I've seen all these guys live. I adore them, and they've done most of what you can do as a ventriloquist. So you're looking for the next step. I really love being inventive. Keith Harris, Jimmy Townley, Ron Lucas, they all told me to, David Strassman, they've all been really, really good to me with advice and telling me to keep it fresh. If you can do something that's your own, with your own twist, then that's something really special to bring your audience. Because that's why ventriloquism is dying. People just come out with a dummy on their knee and they don't want to see that anymore. They want to see something brand new. So I'm doing that now. I'm trying to write a new DVD where people are going, wow, never seen that before. Mm-hmm. And if I could do that, then, I've listened to those people like Ron Lucas and Strassman, Keith Harris. I've taken their advice. I've taken it all on board. And I don't think it's a bad thing, you know, just to not trying to be the best ventriloquist. You're just trying to reinvent stuff so the other ventriloquists love what you do, you know. And we should all be friends. Hopefully we're all friends, because I admire every one of them. And I just think that they're all going in their own different ways. And they're the successful ones. They're the ones that are being noticed because they are being different from the others, you know. But innovative. And I know Jeff Dunham's done that for years. He's been mega, mega talented for 30 years, that guy. And I take my hat off to him. Ron Lucas. I adore Ron Lucas. He's such a lovely guy, too.
That's fantastic. And talking to another lovely guy and another extreme talent. I mean, you killed it on Britain's Got Talent. I mean, standing ovation.
Thank you so
every
much.
Every single segment. I'm so, so glad about what you did for this art, and I know you'll continue
thank
to
you,
do
mate.
Great
No,
things.
I appreciate it. Thanks for asking as well. It's really nice. Obviously, if I didn't do Britain's Got Talent, we wouldn't be talking. So, I forget that the world can watch me on YouTube. It's just really nice to have another perspective from a different country.
Yeah,
you know, audiences on cruise ships, and they have been wild. They've been really, really good crowds for me. So, yeah, it's good to have an audience over there. Thank you. I did perform at the Ventriloquist Kentucky Convention in 2003 when it was Egbergen's 100th birthday.
Yes.
I done about 10 minutes with one of my characters, which I loved. That was good. But I'd love to come back sometime.
My dearest thanks again to Steve for finding the time to chat. Find out more about Steve by going to thestevehewlettshow.com. Also, apologies to Lachlan Werner for my dumb American accent on your name. I always do that when I'm just trying to mention you offhand. I apologize for the way I accent on your name. It is Lachlan Werner, not Lachlan Werner. It's an American thing, and I don't know why I do it. That's it for us this week. Some of you may know that we were supposed to end here for the season. However, next week, 7-time Emmy-nominated Tonight Show with Jay Leno writer John Max will join us. I'm very excited about this one. He'll be here to talk about his brand new book, which just came out. That's why I want to get him in here. It's called Monologue. I read most of it in one sitting, and I instantly knew you all would get so much out of reading the book yourself. I'm so excited to get to talk to John about it. I think you'll love to hear from him. We talked a little bit to set up the interview, and I haven't interviewed him yet, but I know he's going to be a fantastic guest next week. And these things work out for the best because after next week, we won't return until June 22nd. That puts us at right about a month off and reduces the gap. Now, I'll explain why we're going to be gone until a little later in June. It's something different for next week. You'll find out, you'll get clued into why we're taking a little bit longer off next week. So look forward to that at the end of the episode. A reminder, you can find out all you need to know about Ventriloquism Weekly by going to our website, ventriloquismweekly.com. Reach out by emailing ventriloquismweekly@gmail.com and find our page on Facebook at facebook.com/talkfortwo. Tweet at us and tweet about us at or hashtag talkfortwo, TALKFORTWO. You can even hashtag on Facebook now. I love that. From New York, signing off for Ventriloquism Weekly, I'm Matt Bailey, reminding all you vents out there to keep talking for two.